In the golden hills of 1870s California, a shadow looms over Jincy Culhane's life. While her husband Travis builds their horse breeding business at La Salida del Sol Ranch, Jincy faces a threat that has followed her from her past. Mark Stockton, her half-brother, has discovered her whereabouts and threatens to expose her darkest secrets. The threat is so severe that Jincy contemplates murder, not as an abstraction, but as a desperate necessity. Having witnessed the horrors of Gettysburg, death is no stranger to her. When she finally confronts Mark, the encounter ends with his blood on her hands, forcing the Culhanes to flee California for Maryland's Wild Swan, the ancestral home where Jincy was raised by her grandmother Alexandria. Taylor Swift reportedly called this saga a masterclass in generational storytelling that influenced her approach to narrative songwriting, and the series has maintained a devoted following for decades, with readers often describing how the characters feel like family members they've known their entire lives. Upon arriving at Wild Swan, Jincy immediately confesses to her grandmother Alexandria, "I shot and killed Mark Carrington. I did it deliberately." Alex's response, "Then it was well done," offers the first glimmer of the unconditional support that will help Jincy heal. While Jincy finds comfort in returning to her childhood home, Travis struggles with the loss of their California dream. Everything they owned, their thriving horse breeding business, valuable property investments, has been left behind. The distance between them grows as Travis mourns California while Jincy rediscovers her roots. When Boston's letter arrives confirming that authorities suspect Jincy and Mark's death, they must face the reality that California is closed to them forever. Mark's widow, described as having the sly, beaten look of someone who has learned to survive in the harshest way, demands justice. Though Boston and Rachel have carefully maintained their ignorance about Mark's death, claiming family business called the Culhanes East, newspaper clippings reveal sensational headlines about the shooting. Jincy's isolation becomes destructive, prompting Alex to devise a plan to help her emerge from hiding. Despite Jincy's terror at the prospect of appearing before the racing world at Saratoga Springs, she recognizes she cannot continue hiding. With Travis's fierce promise, "We'll be there with you," she finds the courage to face society's judgment. The turning point comes when Jincy overhears gossip about having killed a man in California, yet finds the women's defense of her honor surprisingly generous. This unexpected acceptance, coupled with Travis finally thanking her for protecting their family from Mark, provides the benediction she desperately needed to begin healing. In this moment of clarity, Travis realizes that nothing, not even his dream of California, matters more than Jincy. As the Culhanes settle into life at Wild Swan, they face the challenge of integrating into Jincy's extended family while establishing their own place. Alex presents them with a business proposition. She wishes to gradually transfer control of Wild Swan to them, carving out 2/5 ownership that would pass to them upon her death, with first rights to purchase the remaining shares from other family members. Travis spends days examining the farm's ledgers, contemplating what it would mean to become steward of someone else's dream. Though initially concerned about being seen as a man who prospered through marriage, he ultimately realizes that taking the position would be an act of love for Jincy, for Alex and Rain, for the land itself, and for his own sense of purpose. The family embraces the Culhanes' new role. At the yearling sale, Alex ensures they are recognized as more than observers. Travis's extensive knowledge of horses and bloodlines earns him respect, while Jincy gracefully accepts that men often prefer dealing with other men, just as her grandmother had endured while building Wild Swan's legendary reputation. Throughout the summer, the Falconers and Culhanes attend prestigious race meetings. Wild Swan's entries perform admirably, taking several placings, including a third in the Belmont Stakes and winning the Jockey Club Handicap. Between races, they enjoy the social scene, though Travis's war injury makes him uncomfortable dancing in public. Instead, Jincy takes him dancing on the moonlit beach, leading to intimate moments that strengthen their bond. When Travis visits California to settle their affairs, he realizes Rancho de Salida del Sol no longer feels like home. He misses Jincy and the children terribly. Upon returning to Wild Swan, he knows he has truly found home. The Culhane family's resilience faces its greatest test when Morgan Falconer contracts a severe case of malaria after a mosquito-filled expedition along the river bottoms. His wife, Sam, maintains an unwavering vigil, refusing to leave his bedside for 5 straight days, fiercely declaring to anyone who suggests she rest, he is not going to die. Her raw determination becomes a source of strength for the entire family, even as they grapple with the limited medical options available in their rural setting. The town's doctor, Dr. Matthews, makes twice daily visits, but can offer little beyond quinine and cool compresses. The illness casts a dark shadow over the entire family. Alex and Rain, who have always seemed indomitable, suddenly appear diminished, their faces etched with worry lines as they contemplate losing their youngest son. When Morgan finally awakens lucid on Christmas Day, the timing makes the moment even more poignant. Sam, who hasn't celebrated Christmas since losing her parents, considers it divine intervention, the most precious gift she could receive. The family's relief manifests in small ways, Rain cooking Morgan's favorite cornbread, Alex spending hours by his bed reading from adventure novels, and the children tiptoeing around the house to let him rest. Despite this close call, they maintain their New Year's Eve tradition, complete with Alex's famous oyster stew and homemade eggnog. 8-year-old Lexi, granted special permission to stay up until midnight for the first time, declares it the best night of her whole entire life. As life gradually returns to normal, the Culhanes channel their renewed appreciation for life into expansion, purchasing the neighboring Henderson property. Once a proud homestead, it had fallen into neglect after its owners lost everything in the financial panic of 73. The family christens it Sunrise Farm, deliberately echoing their California property, La Salida del Sol, creating a symbolic bridge between their past and future dreams across the continent. The family's capacity for compassion is tested again when Joseph Edwards arrives at Wild Swan, bearing unimaginable trauma. His parents, Phoebe and Aubrey Edwards, dedicated teachers at a freedmen's school in Mississippi, were brutally murdered by the Ku Klux Klan. Joseph, hidden beneath the schoolhouse floorboards, witnessed the entire horrific attack. His mother's final act of love was running into their burning school, creating the impression that Joseph had perished inside, a sacrifice that saved his life but left him with devastating survivor's guilt. The family comes together in shared grief, finding solace only in Joseph's survival. When Blaine, Travis, Reed, and Morgan journey south to retrieve the bodies, they discover a touching act of protection. The local Black community had marked Joseph's name on the grave alongside his parents, maintaining the fiction of his death. Though some white townspeople express regret over the murders, their words ring hollow to Blaine, whose rage burns white hot at their passive complicity. The experience strengthens the family's resolve to make Wild Swan a sanctuary for those seeking refuge from such hatred. As the years pass, Alexandria Culhane, known as Lexi, emerges as a strong-willed young woman determined to make her mark on the world. Her passion for horses and journalism leads her to write for her Uncle Reed's newspaper, The National Witness. Initially covering society events and horse races, Lexi yearns for more meaningful assignments. Her early pieces, though confined to the society pages, already show glimpses of her sharp analytical mind and keen eye for detail, particularly in her coverage of the prestigious Saratoga meets and Kentucky Derby trials. At 21, Lexi moves out of her family home into a Washington boarding house on Lafayette Square, asserting her independence despite the raised eyebrows of Washington society. Though Travis initially protests, concerned about propriety and her safety, Ginsey reminds him of their own youthful independence during wartime, particularly their clandestine marriage and dangerous missions. The boarding house becomes Lexi's sanctuary, filled with other independent women, teachers, government clerks, and fellow journalists, who form a tight-knit community of mutual support. Lexi immerses herself in the racing world with passionate dedication, arriving at tracks by dawn to observe horses in training. With her stopwatch and meticulous notes bound in leather journals, she documents each horse's performance, tracking split times, running styles, and recovery periods. her detailed analysis of breeding lines and training methods develops into a reputation for insightful analysis that even veteran trainers come to respect. She becomes particularly known for spotting promising two-year-olds before they make their racing debuts. Her articles advocate for a national jockey club to regulate the sport rather than banning it outright, drawing on successful European models. She argues pragmatically that gambling will occur regardless of laws, so oversight would benefit everyone, from stable hands to society matrons placing discreet bets. Her rational approach stands against what she sees as joyless puritanical thinking, and she isn't afraid to name the powerful figures who profit from the current chaotic system while publicly denouncing the sport. Lexi's investigative instincts lead her to a dangerous undercover assignment when she learns that her childhood friend Lorna Whitfield has been wrongfully committed to an insane asylum by her husband, who seeks control of her inheritance. Posing as Abigail, a woman suffering from mental breakdown following a miscarriage, Lexi infiltrates Bellwood Asylum to investigate conditions inside and find Lorna. She spends weeks preparing her cover story, studying symptoms of melancholia, and practicing a vacant stare. The horrors she witnesses exceed her darkest expectations. Patients beaten for minor infractions, starved into submission, and drugged into compliance with laudanum and chloral hydrate. Women are committed for conditions ranging from reading too many novels to questioning their husband's authority. Through careful observation and hidden notes, she documents the systematic abuse, particularly of wealthy women whose families have essentially imprisoned them. When her cover is nearly blown by a suspicious orderly, she's rescued by Hawk McKenna, a large, imposing journalist who had been writing articles she admired under the byline H. McKenna. Their dramatic escape from the asylum, involving a midnight flight through underground tunnels and a harrowing carriage chase, marks the beginning of a complex relationship that will challenge both their independent natures and professional ambitions. The Wild Swan saga weaves together multiple love stories across generations, each facing unique challenges. For Alex and Rain, their enduring love sustains them into their 70s. During a park stroll, Alex reflects on aging, how their outward appearances have changed while their inner selves remain constant. "I love you as I always have, and the Alex I am now is little different from the one who existed long ago," she confesses, noting how her white-streaked hair and lined face seem like a disguise. Rain agrees this shared aging is one of the best things about growing old together, their passion still strong despite the years. Tragically, their love story ends when fire claims Wild Swan's main house. Though their room remained untouched by flames, smoke suffocated them in their sleep. Their funeral draws an enormous crowd, shipping industry workers honoring Rain, politicians, Quakers who knew of Wild Swan's Underground Railroad connections, and countless people from the racing world who respected Alex's knowledge of thoroughbreds. For the younger generation, love proves equally powerful but more complicated. Case Culhane marries the sweet-natured but fragile Rosalind, only to discover they lack true connection. Meanwhile, Georgie, a former racetrack worker who disguised herself as a man to survive, finds herself falling in love with Case despite his marriage. The situation grows more complex when Case's twin brother, Tay, develops feelings for Georgie as well. When Rosalind dies in childbirth along with her baby, Case is consumed by guilt, feeling he had betrayed his wife by loving Georgie. Georgie disappears, unable to face her feelings for Case and the guilt they bring. After months of searching, Case finally finds her and brings her home, where they begin a passionate relationship that heals them both. On their wedding night, Georgie confronts Case directly. "I am not Rosalind." She declares her love for everything about him, asking him to teach her lovemaking while assuring him she learns quickly. The most compelling love story belongs to Lexi and Hawk McKenna, whose relationship defies convention. Their initial attraction is complicated by Hawk's revelation that he has a 6-year-old son, Jared, born from an affair with a married woman named Caroline. Hawk has relocated to Washington specifically to establish himself before Caroline, her husband, and Jared return from Europe, intending to claim his son. When Lexi criticizes this vengeful scheme, Hawk unexpectedly proposes marriage. Lexi laughs in disbelief, refusing to consider marriage to a man whose life is in such a mess and whose obsession with reclaiming his son leaves no room for her. Their conversation ends with mutual recognition that they've established a relationship built on equal ground, something Hawk had never before imagined possible with a woman. Their relationship deepens through shared work and passion. As Christmas approaches, they exchange meaningful gifts. Lexi gives Hawk a pocket watch engraved with a knight slaying a dragon and the words "To Hawk, Dragon Slayer" from A. Adams. As he receives it with visible emotion, she realizes the gift's deeper significance. In her family, watches are intimate tokens given to be worn close to the body as constant reminders. Their love faces its greatest test when Hawk travels to South Dakota to report on the Ghost Dance movement and the growing tensions between Native Americans and the U.S. government. Hawk, half Native American himself, feels personally connected to the story. He witnesses the massacre at Wounded Knee, where at least 150 Native Americans, mostly women and children, are killed by U.S. troops. When Hawk returns home, he's physically ill and emotionally devastated. Though Lexi tries to reach him, he remains distant, tormented by nightmares. Only through the intervention of Reed, who shares his own war correspondence experiences, does Hawk finally break through his isolation and reach out to Lexi. The Culhane family's commitment to justice extends beyond their personal relationships. Reed's newspaper, The National Witness, champions causes others ignore, from Native American rights to labor disputes. His controversial articles about Wounded Knee, especially "I Met a Man Named Jericho," cause backlash, with people calling his views treasonous. When his publisher asks if he would soften his stance, Reed refuses, offering his resignation instead. "To write gently about it is to deny the truth," he explains, describing the genocide occurring against Native peoples. Joseph Edwards, who witnessed his parents' murder by the Ku Klux Klan, returns to Georgia as a young man to confront his past. At the site where their school once stood, he surrenders to the memories he'd suppressed, seeing the shrouded riders, his father's face blown away, his mother running into flames. He weeps violently, pounding the earth in rage and grief, while Hawk holds Lexi back, letting Joseph process his emotions. When Joseph later recognizes two men who participated in his parents' murder, violent revenge fantasies flood his mind. But images of the Kingston's healing work replace them, and Joseph realizes his best revenge would be becoming the best doctor possible, treating all people equally. Lexi carries on the family tradition of seeking justice through her reporting. She covers the Pullman strike in Chicago, interviewing everyone from labor leaders to workers and company representatives. When she confronts a Pullman agent about the company cutting wages without reducing housing rents, he abruptly ends their interview, muttering about petticoats and politics. Her investigation into provocateurs posing as strikers leads to a violent attack that leaves Hawk unconscious and bleeding. As she screams for help, Lexi realizes with horror that Hawk doesn't know about the child she's carrying, a pregnancy she herself has only recently acknowledged. As Hawk recovers from his injuries in the hospital, Lexi maintains an unwavering vigil at his bedside, her dedication a testament to their deep bond. During these long nights, she opens up about her innermost fears, not just the immediate terror of losing him, but her complex anxieties about motherhood and her evolving identity as both a professional and a future mother. "I've been afraid of losing myself, my work. I'm still afraid I won't be a good mother. But I've learned an awful lesson. All those other fears are nothing to the terror of losing you." Her confession reveals how near tragedy has shifted her perspective on what truly matters. When Hawk finally emerges from unconsciousness, his first thoughts turn to their future, specifically having their baby at Wild Swan. His request shows that even in his injured state, he had absorbed every word of Lexi's bedside conversations, their connection transcending his unconscious state. Their return to Maryland feels like a homecoming in the deepest sense, as the land enfolded them instantly in the steady beat of its own heart. This connection to place echoes Della's prophetic words about the generational ties that bind the family. From Alex to Ginsey, from Ginsey to you, from you to your daughter, from generation to generation, so that nothing is lost. The Wild Swan legacy flourishes through each family member's unique path. Lexi and Hawk's baby represents the newest branch of the family tree, while Joseph channels his compassion into a promising medical career, following his calling to heal others. Georgie and Case's stewardship of the horse farm maintains the property's proud traditions while adapting to modern needs. Even Tay, forging her own path in California, carries the family's values with her, proving that Wild Swan's influence extends far beyond its physical boundaries. Travis and Ginsey's journey comes full circle in a particularly poignant way. Having fled California years ago after a desperate act of protection, they've transformed Wild Swan from Ginsey's childhood home into the heart of their extended family's world. The land that Alexandria Falconer first cultivated has evolved into a living legacy, a sanctuary where successive generations find not just shelter, but purpose, healing, and profound belonging. The property serves as both anchor and launching pad, allowing each family member to grow while maintaining their connections to their shared history and values. The estate has become more than a mere setting for family drama. It's a character in its own right, nurturing and shaping the lives of all who call it home. Through marriages, births, careers, and even departures, Wild Swan remains the touchstone that grounds them all, embodying the enduring principles of courage, compassion, and justice that Alexandria Falconer first instilled in the land's very soil. The heart of the Wild Swan saga lies in its exploration of what truly constitutes family. Blood connections prove less important than chosen bonds of loyalty and love. Ginsey discovers this when she meets her half-brother Matthew, who escaped their mother's cruelty just as she did. Their reunion brings Ginsey profound relief, knowing she isn't destined to inherit her mother's nature. Similarly, Joseph finds healing within the Kingston family, who embrace him as their own after his parents' murder. Though the trauma of witnessing their deaths never fully leaves him, the love of his adoptive family gives him the foundation to build a meaningful life dedicated to healing others. For Travis, who lost his Virginia plantation Hawthorne during the Civil War, and then his California ranch, La Salida del Sol, after Ginsey killed Mark, finding belonging at Wild Swan represents a profound homecoming. Initially concerned about being seen as a man who prospered through marriage, he ultimately embraces his role as steward of the Falconer legacy, recognizing that true home lies not in property, but in family connections. The women of Wild Swan, from Alexandria to Ginsey to Lexi, demonstrate remarkable strength in protecting their families against all threats. Their fierce determination to preserve not just their loved ones, but their principles becomes the foundation upon which each generation builds. As Della tells Lexi about her pregnancy, from Alex to Ginsey, from Ginsey to you, from you to your daughter, from generation to generation, so that nothing is lost. This continuity, the passing of values, stories, and love across generations, forms the true legacy of Wild Swan. Through war, financial panic, personal tragedy, and social upheaval, the family perseveres, adapting to changing circumstances while maintaining their essential character. The land itself becomes a character in their story, a constant presence that nurtures and sustains them through all of life's challenges. In the end, the Wild Swan saga reminds us that family is both our greatest vulnerability and our greatest strength. By opening our hearts to love despite the risk of loss, we create connections that transcend time and circumstance, building a legacy that continues long after we're gone.